We would like to overlook the difficulty of daily repentance and death to our sins in the interest of progressing to a more advanced spirituality.
Rebecca Curtis from her new audiobook, Ladylike, Living Biblically.
Somehow, spiritual advancement always amounts to our getting to spend more time on the things we like and calling it stewardship or service.
You can purchase and download an audio version of Ladylike, Living Biblically at Amazon, Audible, and iTunes. Ladylike, Living Biblically by Rebecca Curtis and Rose Adel.
So I brought up the conversation with Mum. Mum was completely on board first thing. Totally, like, interested. She's like, well, what would be your name if you were a boy? And just, that was so great. Dad took a little more time to actually call me Leo and use male pronouns. So that was totally fine.
Leo is definitely not a girl. Leo is more boy than girl, but he's not, like a lot of transgender people, a male mind who happened to be born in a female body. He's a non-binary mind who happened to be born in a female body.
That's the voice of Leo and his mother, or her mother, because Leo is actually a 10-year-old girl who, and I'm going to try and keep this straight, who believes that she isn't a girl, but she also doesn't believe she's a boy. Her mom says she's more boy than girl. Leo believes that she is a non-binary, neither boy nor girl, at least for now. And this is not unusual. It may be unusual for this to be a 10-year-old girl saying these things, but of course, that's less and less unusual every day, isn't it? So we're told we now live in a non-binary world. Not only no male or female, it can be both or either or something in between. And it also applies to other truths. In fact, we don't live in a world where there are the binaries of truth and falsehood anymore, do we? Black and white, right or wrong. A non-binary world. We're going to be talking about Christianity in a non-binary world with Pastor Jonathan Fisk in our weekly series, Worldview Watch. A little bit later in this hour, Dr. Ken Cherb will join us. Part 38 of our weekly series on Martin Luther and the Reformation. Luther on the Sermon on the Mount will be in verses 7 and 8 of Matthew chapter 5, walking slowly through Luther's sermonic treatment of the Beatitudes with Dr. Ken Cherb. You can join us for the next hour or call in number 1-877-623-6943. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. Our Twitter address, @issuesetc. And for our beloved on-demand listeners, please use the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8382, 618-223-8382. Joining us for our series, Worldview Watch, today we're going to talk about Christianity in a non-binary world. Pastor Jonathan Fisk, pastor of St. John's Lutheran Church in Oaks, North Dakota, creative director of Worldview Everlasting TV and author of the book, Broken, Seven Christian Rules That Every Christian Ought to Break as Often as Possible. Jonathan, welcome back.
Thanks, Todd. Glad to be here.
This little girl, Leo, who thinks she's not a girl or a boy, to hear her talk about this, it's with childlike innocence. She so sincerely believes that she is non-binary, neither girl nor boy. Her mom and dad don't tell her no. Her school and teachers, they don't tell her no. Society certainly isn't telling her no. How could you tell her no?
Yeah, well, you know, let's take this out of the realm of, say, the transgender movement for just a moment. And imagine, I do this every night. I sit at home at my dinner table with my kids. I got five of them. They range from age 11 to 3. And we talk. You know, sometimes we're all in a good mood. Sometimes we're in a bad mood. But pretty regularly, one of my children will say something. They will assert something out loud as truth when it's not truth. They'll say something like, "It is always this way all the time, and that's not fair." And it, just the use of always too often makes it an overstatement. They're putting things in a very different light than the reality, the objective reality that the rest of us are living with that person at the dinner table. And it's my job as a parent, kind of before any other job short of keeping them from accidentally killing themselves with, you know, scissors or whatever, is to help them understand the difference between what they feel in a moment, what they want to assert truth to be, and what truth is. And to bring them into a harmony with the reality that we live in, with the actual existence on this planet, the biological, scientific existence on this planet that we have. So now to bring it back to the story, you know, who am I? Well, I guess in one sense, I'm not this child's parent. I'm observing this because they've made this child a poster for a movement that's being publicized around the world. But as a parent of a child, it is absolutely your duty to tell them what reality is and prepare them for the world that we live in, to engage that. And doubly so then. That means living in a world of scientific medical observation, and this is on this issue particularly we're seeing it's not like the jury is still out on this. Psychological profiles and whatnot have come back and shown that there really isn't any scientific benefit or purpose to having children pursue these dreams as they were at a young age. In fact, it seems to cause quite a bit of harm to transition them when they're still very much just exploring who they are. And then this, I guess, is kind of the main point I'm trying to make. It's your job as a parent to tell your child who they are. And you can be wrong. I mean, you can make mistakes in that. And as they grow up, they might figure out, you know, I don't like the Cowboys as much as I thought. I like the Patriots or whatever. But you do this in everything. You tell them to brush their teeth. You tell them what to eat. You help them dress all the way up until they're out the door to college. You're helping them make these decisions. Why, on a matter of your biological sexuality, are we suddenly unable to see the obvious, to see what is good or not? And the answer comes down to what you said so well there at the start, Todd, that living in a non-binary world puts us not just in a place where we don't know male and female, it puts us in a place where we don't know yes or no, period. Truth is just gone, right? And so how can I then now over here say something's wrong? It's because living in a world where there is no objective truth is more or less impossible and a recipe for human disaster.
So the broader context here isn't just that, and this is genuinely a tragic story, because little Leo's story is not the only story of children that have very strange ideas about who they are, and it's being reinforced by the very adults who ought to be introducing them to the truth and to reality in a careful and caring way. But it's a common story in all of society. The bigger picture here is that when we say non-binary, we mean all binaries are out the window, according to our culture.
Yeah, I mean, can you imagine a world without the difference between salty and sugary? Like, that's a binary idea, right? Savory and sweet. It's great. God made it that way. Wonderfully so. I'm so thankful for it. So if you're going to attack the idea that there are binaries, yeses and nos in the world, which is what postmodernism ultimately does, claiming that all things are relative, you are attacking the best things that help us know and experience what we actually experience and to share those experiences. And this goes in other directions as well. I mean, it's not just sexuality that parents in our age that we live in don't tell their children about. I mentioned diet a moment ago. But, you know, how hard is it now to help a child who is facing obesity, say at age 6 or age 7, to reckon with that and change the behavior pattern before it becomes something that's a lifelong debilitating disease? Right? Are we allowed to even talk about that, or am I offensive as I suggest that maybe pursuing health in our children in all forms is a good idea, something we should strive for? And just as much as the case, you know, a 50-year-old man who weighs 350 pounds, who's sitting with his doctor, being told that, you know, if you don't deal with this, you're going to have a heart attack, doesn't get to say, well, you know, I'm a thin man trapped in a fat man's body, so you need to recognize me as a thin man and just treat me like that. You know, biological reality is unavoidable. We can't dodge it, no matter how much we want to make believe something different. And it is tragic. I don't know what's going on in these children's heads. I'm not a psychological scientist in this regard. I see the bigger picture here and what we're doing to our ability to call anything, to call a thing what it is. And it's sort of terrifying that the very people, again, who are charged with protecting children are now just seemingly unable to tell their children yes or no on any matter. And this goes all the way from sexualities to no, you can't have that candy bar because you behave so poorly in the store. We seem to be unable to pass on truth at all.
So let's talk about something else here, and that is it's mixed in here with the basic diagnosis of the problem. The idea of self-identification, along with the notion that there is really no objective reality or truth, the only thing you're left with, Pastor Fisk, it seems, is your own truth, and you decide for yourself everything, including who and what you are.
Right. and you end up flailing. Even then, you cannot define yourself apart from the things around you. This is a human problem. When we divorced ourselves from God as our identity in the Garden of Eden, Him telling us who we are, we suddenly had to make the creation into our God. And we couldn't just be gods on our own. So we went out and we found a tree, and we bowed down before the tree and said, okay, this tree is how I know who I am, right? It is nothing new. It's how paganism works, is trying to define ourselves through the nature that we inhabit or that we consume even in our age. So it's not like we're totally set apart from the past. But what we see now since the Enlightenment is it's on hyperdrive. I think, therefore I am, which is that I'm going to define myself with my thoughts and cut off from the ability increasingly to find something to identify ourselves with. So where I used to be able to say, you know, I am John's son, and I identify with John, my father, who was John Builder, and so now I kind of know who I am. Now that doesn't count. Right? I used to be able to say I'm an American and I'm proud to be one, and here's why, because Americans are like this. Well, now that doesn't count, right? Culture has been dissected to such a level that you can't really fall back on it anymore, whether it be at the family level or what have you. And what happens then is you're just floating. And for, I think, most people, not all, but for most people, where this leaves you is with a certain sense of despair, because you're being driven deeper and deeper inside to try to create who you are. And what you find inside is something that needs something else to cling to. You need a God, right? And as they're taken away, where do you go? And you know, sexuality is only one way in which this is playing out. It's an existential, you know, you could say a spiritual problem of the postmodern human being trying to be something without being connected to anything else. It's an impossible task. And it's why I think you see such a high level of angst among teenagers as they struggle. They're all being asked, what do you want to be when you grow up? And where the parent, your job again as a parent, is to tell the child what they should be when they grow up. I mean, it doesn't mean you have to say you will be a doctor or you will play, you know, sports or what have you. But your job is to help them. Like, look, no, you're good at this. You go, do more of that. You know, go. Let me encourage you. Let me take you to learn more about this thing, right? To help this child whose brain is still developing. They cannot conceive of the world as we do as adults. It's just beyond their ability to conceptualize it. We have to help them. We have to guide them. It's why you're giving them. If not, why be a parent at all? Are we just friends? Why not let the state do it, as so many are advocating these days? And maybe that's where this will go.
What happens when this reject? We call it a non-binary world, as though that's a real thing. That's a fantasy. It may be a common fantasy. It may be a almost universally accepted fantasy, but it's a fantasy. The real world is binary by nature. But what happens when this rejection of reality and of the binary nature of the world finds its way into the church?
Oh goodness! Yeah, we lose everything. Yeah, we lose doctrine, right? We lose the word. We lose our faith. We lose the difference between death and life. We lose Christ risen from the dead. Instead, he becomes an idea, right? We lose the ability to tell between truth and falsehood, which, as I said a moment ago, it was in our divorce from the true God that we lost the ability to know who we really are. And Christianity is a re-identification of us in the man Jesus Christ, who pays our sin and who rises from the dead with our justification. You lose that kind of ability to call that thing what it is. And instead, all things become questions. All things become matters of interpretation. All things become your opinion. And some people would rejoice in this as if it's a path to truth, but it's kind of like, you know, the drug addict taking more of the drug to get rid of the onset of the withdrawal symptoms, right? And our drug is running away from God telling us who we are. And so in the church, what it does gradually is it destroys the church. And I think we're at a point now where we need to really openly be able to say that there are quite a few quote-unquote churches in America, buildings on street corners with the word church on a sign out front saying welcome. There are quite a few of those that have a Christian history but are not Christian churches. And it's not just about sexuality, but the sexual movement has certainly been a part of their letting go of everything that identified them as Christian. And their re-identification with sort of an absentee truthism. And like you said a moment ago, too, you know, you can't escape the reality. No matter how much you want to pretend that salt and sweet are the same, you know, try putting as much salt on your cereal as you put sugar on your cereal and see how you do. You know, it's just not going to work out at the end of the day. Natural law is how kind of philosophical Christianity has spoken about this in the past, the idea that God's reality is built here in such a physical, chemical, biological way we can't escape it. It does come home to roost. It continues to push through. Whether that's then a country that can't tell the truth at all, becomes so lackadaisical and undutiful that it becomes conquered by another one who at least has a grasp of natural law, or whether it's that the law burbles up from the inside, as we're seeing sort of with the demographic movements, right, where the rejection of sex has led to cultures that no longer can reproduce and they're just going to disappear, while the cultures that still reproduce are going to continue to grow and even take over those lands. So also, I found this really fascinating, not in Leo's story, but in a story that was very connected to it on the New York Times called From He to She in First Grade. There's a little boy that they're trying to talk about how he's a little girl, and the big defining thing which makes him a little girl is he wants to wear a dress. So, well, what about a dress? If you're really a sexual revolutionist, if you're really we're non-binary, what about a dress is feminine? How can you say that? How prejudiced of you to say that women have to wear dresses, or that if you wear a dress, you're feminine, right? And yet, somehow, we can't get away from it. We can't get away from, they grew the kid's hair out and put barrettes in his hair so that he would look like a girl, because girls look like something, and boys look like something. So as hard as we're trying to get away from non-binary, it's still here, right? We're trying to get away from binary. It's still here. We can't escape the physical reality. The only question is whether we're going to live in a sort of an admitted madness with each other, where we all run around and say the emperor has clothes, even though he doesn't, or at what point some other culture that is able to just kind of live within reality casts us aside, right? That we become so bankrupt of ideas that we can no longer live on the fumes of a past age that believed in truth and falsehood.
Pastor Jonathan Fisk is our guest. It's our biweekly series, Worldview Watch. Today we're talking about Christianity in a non-binary world. He is pastor of St. John's Lutheran Church in Oaks, North Dakota, and creative director of Worldview Everlasting TV.
Come and experience firsthand by sitting down in classes and actually hearing professors, coming to chapel, which is always the high point of the day, to hear the Word of God and to lift our voices in song.
Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. Paul Grimm on why you should consider visiting Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Spend time talking to professors. I mean, there's not a professor here who will not be willing to take time, whether it's after chapel during the coffee hour or just to come into one's study and sit down and talk for a while, to answer questions, to, you know, help them to get a sense of, A, you know, do they want to be a pastor or a deaconess? And then B, is this the right place? And, well, maybe C would be the question, is now the right time for them to make that decision?
If you've contemplated the vocation of pastor or deaconess, contact Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, 1-800-481-2155, 800-481-2155, or send an email to admission@ctsfw.edu.
Providing artillery support for the church militant on the front lines, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Metro East Lutheran High School in Edwardsville, Illinois, engages young adults in a Christ-centered environment, delivering academic excellence and spiritual growth to develop Christian leaders for tomorrow. We provide a Christ-focused alternative to public high schools. Many of our students receive tuition assistance. To help us provide tuition assistance to more students, go to melhs.org and click on the giving page, or call me, Dr. J. Krause, principal, at 618-656-0043.
Are you a homeschool parent looking for help teaching certain subjects? Or do you want your student to study the history, languages, and literature of Western civilization? Memoria Press Online Academy has live online classes with master teachers to help you. Their teachers have years of experience teaching, delighting, and moving students literally from all around the world. Your homeschool year doesn't have to be difficult. Visit MemoriaPressAcademy.com or call 877-745-8866.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin.
It's our series Worldview Watch. We're talking about Christianity in a non-binary world. Our guest, Pastor Jonathan Fisk, is author of the book Broken, Seven Christian Rules That Every Christian Ought to Break As Often As Possible. You can purchase it by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, 800-325-3040, or browse before you buy under the Listen On Demand page at issuesetc.org. I want to talk a little bit about the nonsensical nature of this thing. And you started down that road where in a society where we're told that gender is not an objective reality and that there's no such thing as girl or boy. There's no such thing as man or woman in any objective sense. The very movements like the transgender movement reinforce the most, I mean, it's almost down to the pearls and heels reinforcing almost 1950s stereotype of male and female when they partake in their individual fantasies. Talk about that.
Right. And, you know, I've heard even some feminists really decrying this, how this movement has set them back. and there's no better example in my mind than the Bruce Jenner Vanity Fair cover, where, you know, the moment that this male comes out as female, the only way to picture him is basically something that's fit for the Playboy magazine cover, you know, at least of 30 years ago. And turning his womanhood into nothing but a sex figure. And that if he's not that, if he's not sexual, then he's not woman. It's on the one hand, again, it's just natural law, you know, not necessarily the sexuality, but the fact that man and woman, we are, it is about how we look. It's also about how we act. It's about what we do. It's about what we're capable of doing, particularly when it comes to procreation. But, you know, to look like a man is something, and to recognize that. So in this sense, I think the feminists are wrong trying to get rid of all of those feminine attributes which have been sort of historically associated with woman. In our culture, that would include things like long hair and dresses, to get rid of those as if they're in the way of being woman. So I'm okay with that in a sense, and yet it's ironic how this movement really started with them trying to free themselves from the binary world, and yet even their success now has become its own undermining. And you point out to the nonsensicalness of that. I'm going to say again, this is natural law telling us you can try as hard as you want. You cannot stop what is from being what is. You can cut off parts and mutilate the body. You can pump the body full of hormones. It's going to do what pumping the body full of extra hormones would do. You know, there's a reason why we don't give steroids to men. It's because it does damage to them. Well, now it's okay to give it to a woman so that she can, you know, not have breasts and grow really strong. Well, okay, give it 30 years and then, you know, deal with the side effects of that. You're not going to be able to avoid it. If you take crack, you're going to get addicted to crack, right? It's just you can't pretend reality away. And that we would run around saying that none of this exists in some sort of la-la Maryland is just a tribute to our loss of touch with reality, how wealthy we are. These are, in some ways, the most first-worldy of first-world problems that we can sit here and debate whether or not the sexes exist. You know, we're in an age where, or in a civilization where you need running water and food, you don't really have a chance to talk about these things. You got to deal with what they are. I don't know. I don't have a way to really say what this means or what it's going to come to. But as Christians, at least, we do have to kind of sit back and be like, okay, at what point do we decide we're not part of the American culture anymore? We're not a subculture of the American thinking anymore. I'm going to question all of my assumptions that America has given me for the last 15 years and run them through the meat grinder of what God has actually said and see if I don't have to become a microcosm, if we don't have to become a microcosm of a people set apart. And, you know, the Jews have done this for hundreds of years, thousands of years now. Christians did this initially in the ancient world, and then we kind of became mainstream. But we're not mainstream now. And so at what point do we need to unbuckle ourselves from the mainstream? I think we at least need to have that conversation in this world, too.
Talk about the temptation to which the world just simply happily gives into. You've mentioned Bruce Jenner. And it was just amazing the absolute light speed with which everyone decided, oh, yes, He is a woman. I almost expected people to say, yeah, he always has been one. Don't you remember? He won all those medals as a woman in the Olympics. It was almost that quick and almost that unbelievable. The temptation is there for Christians and for the church to just a little bit play along, to humor, to let the language change, the pronouns change, to compromise the truth, and to compromise what is real for what is fantasy. Talk about that with a few minutes here.
It is a temptation because you don't want to be perceived as mean, right? And that's what they'll call you. You don't want to be perceived as judgmental, as if you're the judge, and that's what they're going to say that you are. And so you're tempted to fuzz the words a little bit, to kind of say what they want you to say to make them feel happy. And yet the scary thing about that is what you've done now is you've let somebody from outside of your truth or your worldview foundation begin to change the code of your worldview. We are a people of the Word as Christians. Words are what matters to us. Our God is the Word made flesh. And yet we're going to let others now begin to redefine intentionally and loudly redefine the meaning of words. We can't do that without eventually losing what we say. Yeah, I mean, this is something that I was even bothered about in the English Standard Version translation. There is a point at which the attempt to use gender-inclusive language in this translation, which is a pretty good translation overall, but it talks about the person Jesus Christ, and the language there in the Greek is anthropos, which can mean men and women. And yet, it also is very clearly, in a sense, talking about Jesus. So why on earth would we ever, ever not say man? Why would we say person? Well, because we're trying to be inclusive and not make the ladies feel bad that we don't put them into every sentence that we talk about humanity with. But what happened was, then we ended up calling Jesus less than male, and you even then lose. I mean, here's an open question, and this is an open question for many Christians. Did Jesus have to be a man? Could he have been a woman and saved us? I've heard formerly LCMS theologians say, yes, he could have been a woman, it would have been okay. But this undercuts almost everything about the Scriptures, about who God is in the identity of Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, and who Adam was, and why it was Adam's sin that made us fall and not Eve's. And so, therefore, why it is it needs to be a king, not a queen, who rises again from the dead, and then from his side gives birth to the new queen, just as the first queen was given birth from the side of Adam, right? You lose all of that in one word. So when we start letting our language be stolen from us, we run a lot of risks that are bigger than, you know, somebody doesn't like me now because they think I'm mean because I believe biology and science are obvious. I mean, isn't it funny? They want to call us science deniers all the time, right? You don't believe in evolution, you're a science denier. It's like, well, if there was ever a science issue, this one's it. It's testable in a laboratory. You know, you can't get away from it.
Pastor Jonathan Fisk is pastor of St. John's Lutheran Church in Oaks, North Dakota. He is creative director of Worldview Everlasting TV, author of the book Broken, 7 Christian Rules That Every Christian Ought to Break As Often as Possible. Jonathan, thank you very much for being our guest.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Todd.
When we come back, we're going to spend some time with Dr. Ken Sherb. Our weekly series with him continues. We are on part 38 of our series on Martin Luther and the Reformation, walking through Luther's treatment of the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew chapter 5, verses 7 and 8. Come up next with Dr. Ken Sherb.
LCMS Rural and Small Town Mission exists to support and encourage congregations in rural and small town settings. In partnership with LCMS districts, RSTM is uniquely positioned to make a major impact in revitalization support, community engagement and outreach training, congregational partnership development, and worker support through providing and developing resources geared specifically to rural and small town congregations. Check us out at lcms.org/RSTM or give us a call at our office. We're here to help.
Are you tired of working nights, weekends, and odd hours trying to cover your bases at home just to make ends meet? At the Cleaning Authority, we call that the multi-job shuffle, and we want to end that for you right now. We'll train you in our proven, efficient cleaning methods, and you'll be partnered to work in pre-qualified homes. Call 314-416-8117 and walk away from the multi-job shuffle with a future in our St. Louis office, 314-416-8117.
Emily finally had to face the truth. Her church choir was a mess.
Katie Schuerman from her new audiobook, House of Living Stones.
Sure, they'd managed to turn out a few decent choral offerings for Sunday worship every now and then, but their confidence and morale were presently hanging lower than pants on a wrapper.
You can purchase and download an audio version of the novel House of Living Stones at Amazon, Audible, and iTunes. House of Living Stones by Katie Schuerman.
Throughout the history of the United States, we as a country have enjoyed our catchphrases from give me liberty or give me death to today's classic, it is what it is. TV commercials have added such classics as where's the beef to eat fresh. Here at St. Mark Lutheran Church in Edmond, Oklahoma, we do not resort to catchphrases. Here we are about growing God's family by preaching God's word, by administering the sacraments, and building up God's people. So the next time you find yourself in central Oklahoma on a Sunday morning, come join the friendly folks at St. Mark in Edmond. You'll be glad you did. This is most certainly true.
Real Reformation Radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Do you have skills as a coder, designer, writer, marketer, project manager, or are interested in building websites? Do you want to help the church proclaim Christ and Him crucified to the digital world that we live in? If yes, you should join our WordSites team. WordSites is a group of tech-savvy volunteers who help fellow Lutheran organizations build effective websites. Plus, we have fun while we're doing it. To submit your name, or to learn more, visit WordSites.org. WordSites, your confessional Lutheran website. Reformed.
Your pastor has been called to shepherd you as a member of Christ's flock. Doxology offers an innovative program of advanced study retreats where your pastor can be refreshed, renewed, and refocused. Find out more at doxology.us. Many pastors report that doxology has been one of the most valuable learning experiences since seminary. Doxology, the Lutheran Center for Spiritual Care and Counsel. Doxology.us. Doxology.us.